Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John Williams today. Big news day. There's going to be some news this afternoon as well. We have another press conference coming up about ComEd. That'll be sometime after the bottom of the hour, 12:30-ish or so. We'll go to that as soon as it starts, of course. In the meantime, we wanted to start out today talking with Michael Miller. He's the Associate Professor of Economics at DePaul University. He joins us today to talk a little bit about all the business news that's going on out there, and we'll bring him by in just a moment. The Dow right now is down just slightly. Stocks are flat. It's really the only place that news isn't happening today. Just so many different things going on, but we will find out a little bit more about that. I saw earlier that the federal government has, the CDC, in fact, has put a stop to any cruises. The cruise industry was supposed to begin rebooting in September. That's now been put on hold until October. There was a no sail order in effect through the end of July. That's now been extended until October. So if you were planning on taking a cruise in mid-September, you may want to pack your bikini away or use it on the beach. You can, you know, go out here. It's nice and hot out. Beautiful hot day today. There's a lot of different, we are seeing some different news, with the number of corporations filing for bankruptcy in the U.S. That's been soaring. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, warned that small and mid-sized business bankruptcies are likely to triple if the U.S. government does not provide additional support. And that financial support is something that we want to talk with Professor Miller about, because there's just, you know, we are on the edge of a cash cliff here. This is something that John and I talked about last week when I was on the show, where the $600 extra on top of what you normally would get for unemployment every week, that is about to come to a crashing halt. It officially ends at the end of July, but I think because of the way the calendar falls, technically the last check may be issued somewhere around the 24th or the 25th of July, just a few short days away from now. There are so many people in this country who already are not able to afford their rent, for example. Roughly about a third of renters did not make their rent payment on time this month. And while over the last few months, we've watched the renters catch up, most of them anyway, there's a huge number of people, almost 40%, that are worried about their July payment, their July rent payment, and not being able to make that. We've also seen just a huge number, in addition to the bankruptcies out there, still about 8.5% of all homeowners who have a mortgage are now in forbearance. And there's some concern about what's going to happen there when that ends. And, of course, while we've also got federal student loan debt in forbearance, there's a lot of people who don't have federal student loans. They have private student loans, and their ability to get forbearance has been a little bit mixed. So there's a lot of different news and information to talk about. So it's 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John Williams. You can find me on offline or online at bestmoneymoves.com or thinklink.com or on Facebook, or you can follow me on Twitter at Glink. Michael Miller, Associate Professor of Economics at DePaul University, joins us now to talk a little bit about today's business news. Mike, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again.
It's nice to have you here. So we have a fair amount of economic news today, but the thing that's really on my mind is this upcoming cash cliff and what millions of Americans are going to do about paying their bills if they suddenly have just a little bit of money coming in.
Yeah, that is an issue that we're going to have to face, but we have to look at through a lens of economic behavior based upon incentives. In other words, people are going to respond to incentives. And if you give them the incentive, say, that I'll pay you more to stay out of work than if you go back to work, then people will stay out of work.
But apparently that's only just a few people on a relative basis. It's really not very many who are getting much more money, and those people are like bartenders, right? You know.
Yes, that's correct.
But, so everybody else is still getting less.
That's correct, but understand that they're not getting nothing. This is on top of normal unemployment compensation. There will still be support. And understand from the very beginning, I've been one who has argued that the government is the one who has caused this problem by demanding that we shut down. And therefore, the government's on the hook to have to pay for this. And so I'm not against providing assistance for Americans who are hurt by the government's policy. The only issue I have is that you have to have an incentive to get people back to work, to give them an incentive to go out there and find the work. And paying them more than they can make in the market is not one way to do that.
Right. So let's talk about finding a job, because that's actually kind of tough right now. There's something like 5.3 million jobs being advertised and something like 18 million people out of work full-time jobs. So that math doesn't add up, right?
That's correct. But see, I was looking at a presentation that was made by James Bullard at the, he's the president of the St. Louis Fed, and I find him to be always very insightful. And he was noting in the data that 60% of the people who are considered unemployed and report themselves unemployed consider themselves to be temporarily unemployed, that they're expecting to be called back soon. The normal percent in the labor data is about 10. So he's convinced that the labor market is such that if we have any kind of a rebound like we are apparently having, that a lot of these people will be going back to work, and they will, since they're temporarily off, their bosses and so forth will be calling them back, and they will then again be unemployed or be employed. And right. Ballard says if this is true, if this 60%, if even a majority of those people are called back, say, over the next couple of months, 5 months or so, unemployment could fall as low as 5% by the end of the year.
Well,
and
okay.
So that means they are finding jobs.
Yeah, okay, so maybe. But if you look at the U5, which is the Fed's measure of people who are permanently unemployed as opposed to...
Oh, sure.
That number's going up. So people are a lot of people are losing jobs permanently, and they're not able to go back. And we know that's true anyway, because we already know that there are tens of thousands of small businesses that have closed their doors for good. We also We also know that retail stores have laid off people for good. And we know that restaurants have across the country have closed for good. So we know that not all of those jobs are coming back.
No, they're not. But it is interesting. These, of course, are self-reported. These are people who are saying that I am on temporary. So, in other words, they haven't been told by their firm that that we're out of business, and so, therefore, you're not coming back. That's why he even makes let's assume that of that 60%, not all of them get to go back to their current job that they had before the pandemic. You still were going to have a dramatic drop in the unemployment rate, which is a good thing. Now, clearly, the economy is still in trouble. I mean, even with the rise in retail sales, with the rise in industrial production, we are rebounding, but we're still well below where we were at the beginning of March when all of this started.
Yeah, I think we're way below. I mean, and frankly, you know, the PPP, which was the support for small and, of course, some large businesses.
Yes.
That's
mm-hmm.
basically over now. You know, people who got that money in mid-April, they were pretty much used it up by mid-June. And so now we're going to start to see companies, you know, do they need more support or not? Do you see another round of PPP stimulus?
I see another round. What I'm going to hope is, when we had the first round, it really was to throw money at anybody, anywhere, at any time because of such a mess. And I understand that. And, of course, this resulted in people who really didn't need the money receiving it. Even my dear departed in-laws who died last year, they got a stimulus check. And,
fabulous.
Yeah, well, so we've had to return it, of course. We've sent it back to the IRS.
Glad to hear that.
Our surprise, though, that the IRS has not yet yet cashed the check, and they've had it for 4 months. But so I'm hoping that the next round of stimulus, which I think is necessary, given the economy is still in trouble, is much more directed, much more pinpoint in how it makes sure that the money goes to the people who are truly in need and to the businesses who are truly in need, rather than just a scattershot of giving it to some people who maybe don't need it as much.
Right. Dead people, I can agree with you, do not need it.
Yeah, that's, that's for sure.
On a whim. So President Trump is talking about how any stimulus bill that comes through is going to have a payroll tax. There is a lot of question about why he's so fixated on payroll taxes, because it really doesn't do all that much comparatively. What do you think?
Well, it is a remember the old idea that if you tax something more, you get less, and if you tax something less, you get more of it. And in this case here, I believe the proposal is that the worker would not pay the 7.5% Social Security, which, of course, is like getting a 7.5% raise for those making less than $140,000. And the employer would not have to pay the other portion of it, which reduces the cost to the employer of bringing the employee on in the job. So in both of these cases, it is lowering the cost of employment and raising the return that people get from employment. And so there is some belief that this is a pretty decent idea. We did this once before. We took it away from the you and I did not have to pay the 7.5% or half of it or something. Economists were surprised. Normally, a temporary tax cut has almost no effect upon the economy. But in the case of this Social Security cut, it was amazing how much of that money was spent. There's something called the marginal propensity to consume, that for every dollar you get, how much of it do you spend? And Americans spent a surprisingly large percent of that cut in their Social Security tax.
Well,
so it was stimulative.
Yeah, lower income people in particular, I know many studies
absolutely.
Have showed, you know, are going out and they're buying things like groceries and bread and milk and cheese and
yes.
whatever. And higher income people ended up putting it away, banking it. So
that's right.
That's not stimulative.
No. But the thing is, this would affect primarily people in the lower income area in terms of, people who make a lot of money, they stop paying Social Security at $140,000 anyhow.
Yeah.
So this would be geared towards people who are making, say, the median income of $50,000 a year or $60,000. They would benefit from this particular tax cut.
Right. Well, we'll have to see how it all plays out. Michael Miller.
Yes, it's been a crazy times.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Michael Miller
yes.
is an associate professor of economics at DePaul University. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Sure.
All right. Thank you.